One day, about 2 weeks into my penance, my morning work shift was interrupted by strange bells. Through my door, I could see a stretch of the bell ropes that ran from the ringer's balcony up toward the Carolyn. I moved round to the other side of the pallet, turning my back to the window, so that I could observe the jerking and recoiling of those ropes. All of out were supposed to be able to decode the changes. I had never been especially good at it. The tones melted together in my ears, and I could not shape them into patterns. But watching the movements of the ropes somehow made it easier. For such work, my eyes were better suited than my ears. I could see the way in which a given rope's movement was conditioned by what its neighbors had done on the previous beats. In a minute or two, without having to ask anyone's help, I was able to recognize this as the call to Elliger. One of my crop was about to join an order. After the changes were rung, half an hour passed before the aught began, and it was another half an hour of singing and chanting before I heard Statho intone the name of Jezri. This was followed by the singing of the Canticle of Inbres. The singing was vigorous, but rough around the edges, so I knew it was the Edharians who were inducting him. During all of that time, it was difficult for me to concentrate on the book, and afterwards, I could get very little done until after Provenor. The next day, those changes rang again. Two more joined the Edharians, and one, Ayla, joined the new circle. No surprise there. We'd always expected her to end up as a hierarch. For some reason, though, this one kept me awake late into the night. It was as if Ayla had flown off to some other consent where I'd never see her again, never get into another argument with her, never compete with her to see who could solve a Theoric's problem first. Which was absurd, since she was staying right here at Edhar and I'd be dining with her in the refectory every day. But some part of my brain insisted on seeing Ayla's decision as a personal loss for me and punished me by keeping me awake. There was a little lesson hidden in the way I had deciphered the Elliger changes by seeing them, for as I continued to write out my account of the preceding weeks, all the while nagged by the sense that I was missing something, I eventually came to the part where I set down my conversation with Fra Orlo on the Starhenge, and his muffled argument with Trustinus immediately afterwards, down by the portcullis. As I wrote this, I looked out my window to the place where it had happened, and noted that the portcullis was closed, even though it was daytime. I also had a view of the centenarian's portcullis. It, too, was closed. Both of them had been closed the whole time I'd been here. With each day that went by, I became more and more certain that the Starhenge had been altogether sealed off, and had been from the very moment that the Master of the Keys had slammed the grate down behind me and Orlo on the eighth day of Appert. This closure of the Starhenge, which I was pretty sure was unprecedented in the entire history of the Consent of Sant Edhar, must have been the topic of the angry conversation between Orlo and Trustinus. Was it too much of a stretch to think that the arrival of the Inquisitors, a couple of days later, had been no coincidence? Ours looked at the same sky as every other Starhenge in the world. If ours had been closed, if there was something out there we weren't supposed to see, the others must have been closed too. The order must have gone out over the reticulum on the eighth day of Appert and been conveyed by the Eta to Sor Trustinus. At the same moment, I reckoned, Varax and Onali had begun their journey to the remote hermitage of Sant Edhar. All of which made a kind of sense, but did nothing at all to help me with the most perplexing and important question. Why would they want to close the Starhenge? It was the last part of the consent one would ever expect the hierarchs to concern themselves with. Their duty was to preserve the discipline by preventing the flow of secular information to the minds of the avowed. The information that came in through the Starhenge was by nature timeless. Much of it was billions of years old. What passed for current events might be a dust storm on a rocky planet or a vortex fluctuation on a gas giant. What could possibly be seen from the Starhenge that would be considered as secular? Like a Fra who wakes in his cell in the hours before dawn smelling smoke, and who knows from this that a slow fire must have been smoldering and gathering heat for many hours while he slumbered in oblivion, I felt not only alarm, but also shame at my own slowness. It didn't help that Eliger was being celebrated almost every day now. For the last year or so, I had sensed myself falling slowly behind some of the others in theorics and cosmography. At times, I'd resigned myself to joining a non-Edharian order and becoming a hierarch. Then, immediately before Trustinus had thrown the book at me, I'd made up my mind to angle for a place among the Edharians and devote myself to exploring the Hylaean theoric world. Instead of which, I was stuck in this room reading nonsense while the others raced even further ahead of me and filled up the available spaces in the Edharian chapter. Technically, there was no limit, no quota. But if the Edharians got more than 10 or 12 new avowed at the expense of the others, there'd be trouble. 30 years ago, when Orlo had come in, they'd recruited 14, and people were still talking about it.